Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special edition of CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts along with noted crime consultants and attorneys often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Danny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, Bureau Chief Tom Shamshak are at the top of the crime at the top of their game. CrimeWire is the place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice.
Well, good evening, everybody. It is the position of CrimeWire that no victim of crime should be violated more than once. Yet, so many innocent men, women, and children who have endured horrific experiences are brutalized repeatedly by an often overwhelmed justice system, or sometimes at the hands of incompetent or corrupt police or politically motivated prosecutors. The majority of these people lack the knowledge and the emotional and financial resources to conduct their own investigations or hire private investigators or attorneys to act on their behalf. The wrongs are not righted. Crimes go unsolved and justice is not served. CrimeWire was created to address these outrages. Tonight, we want to go beyond merely giving wordly cases a half-hour airing. We have decided to take our efforts to help victims and or their families find justice and resolution to another level. Effective immediately, the CrimeWire Investigative Bureau will begin to provide investigative resources for those cases in which we believe there is a reasonable chance of the case being solved. Denny Griffith, take it over.
Yes, and tonight I would like to begin by introducing the Bureau Chief for the CrimeWire Investigative Bureau, Mr. Thomas P. Shamshak. And Tom owns and operates Shamshak Investigative Services, Inc., a private investigation firm that was established in July 1999 and has offices in Boston, Massachusetts, and Providence, Rhode Island. Tom's firm specializes in criminal defense investigations, cold case murders, and missing person cases. Tom also consults as a police procedures expert and has worked for both plaintiffs and defendants' counsel. He has testified in federal court as a police procedures expert. Tom is a retired law enforcement professional. During a 21-year career, he worked in three Massachusetts municipal police departments and served as a police chief of two communities. Tom is affiliated with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Since 2005, he has been a member of Project Alert, a division that investigates unsolved missing children cases. He is also a public safety consultant to the Molly Bish Center for the Protection of Children and the Elderly. Tom has made numerous appearances as an expert commentator on local and national TV networks and news magazine broadcasts. He has provided commentary on a variety of topics, including criminal investigations, unsolved murders, missing persons, and security matters. He has appeared on CNN, Court TV, True TV, Fox News, Investigation Discovery, 2020, and local Boston affiliates of ABC, CBS, and NBC. Since January 2006, Tom has been a regular guest commentator on Nancy Grace Show. He has also served as a consulting investigator for the A&E reality series Psychic Kids, Children of the Paranormal, and he has appeared in four episodes. Tom is a past president of the Licensed Private Detectives Association of Massachusetts and is a member of the board of directors for the National Council of Investigation and Security Services. Tom, welcome to CrimeWire and welcome to the CrimeWire team.
Danny, good evening. Susan, Vito, I'm really honored to be able to participate and partner with this new initiative, and I look forward to expanding your scope of investigative services. And again, I'm really pleased and delighted that after our conversation, a couple of weeks ago, that you saw the vision and you feel that there's a need, and you've involved me. And I look forward to bringing my vast network of resources and my passion for working for people who are not in a position to pay for investigative services. So with that, again, good evening.
Tom, let me, before anybody else gets involved here, let me do make a comment real quick. It reminded me again when I was reading your bio. One of the things that we encounter very frequently in the cases that we profile and get involved in are allegations of investigations by police agencies. And your expertise as an expert in police procedures, I believe, will be in helping to evaluate how some of these cases were in fact investigated, and are the complaints and allegations founded, and so forth. So in addition to your overall qualifications, I'm very excited about having someone on board with your background and understanding of police procedures.
Well, thank you. And again, I can offer a perspective from behind the scenes and talk about what people may say are investigative shortcomings may actually be some type of budgetary constraint. With the shrinking municipal and state law enforcement budgets, they really are having a much more difficult time allocating and deploying these precious, scarce investigative resources. Hence, the Crime Wire Investigative Bureau is in a position to help and step into that gap. And you and Susan and Vito are well aware, but perhaps the listeners are not, that just dealing with the issue of unsolved murders in America, right now the solvability factor nationwide is about 62% of homicides that are cleared by an arrest. Now, 30 years ago, that figure, the solvability figure, was about 92%. Of course, you look at the municipal budgets, and there's such a strain on what's occurring out there. I think the public is going to welcome any opportunity to have some keen resources focused on their particular case.
And Denny,
yes.
Can I say something too to kind of just go expand a little bit on what Tom says? Our listeners and the general public need to understand that sometimes on a case, a suicide is a suicide, okay? Sometimes people need to understand that. Now, we have seen on many of our Crime Wire shows cases that just ring out to us that it wasn't a suicide, that it wasn't a drive-by random shooting, okay? So we need to keep that in consideration, because many, many cases are going to come across our desk. And just like a cold case squad, like Tom could tell you, and a police department works, sometimes a new detective who wasn't even around when the case was going on will look at the files. He'll be put in there, and the chief or the chief of detectives will say to him, go through our old cold cases and see which one you'd like to take a shot at. He will look at many. Some of them he will think are not solvable for whatever reason, or maybe it is a suicide where the family doesn't believe it is. He will take some, like we see on Crime Wire, that shout out to us, hey, we need to look into this. So I like our public, and I hope Tom would agree with me that some cases, and you hate to tell the family that, because the family never wants to believe that their brother or sister or whoever committed suicide.
I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, I was on the phone with a woman who I hope is listening this evening. She reached out to me, and she is confronting a very similar situation and is looking for some investigative guidance. And, you know, I agree with you that there are egregious cases that only the keen eye of a veteran investigator is really going to spot.
Yeah, but I think sometimes, too, is there's a case going on right now in Texas. It's Krishanda Townsend, and it's because of a lot of heat that was put on with the blogs and the radio shows that they're looking for this 19-year-old teenager that was an abduction classified and got changed. I mean, I think that what CrimeWire does is more than that, because we can see it, and as many people hear, I jump up and down on my chair when I know it's something else right away. And then what you bring and what Boston University brings, Tom, and what and all of us bring is this ability then to go out and further the resources, because in a lot of these cases it might take a forensic, it might take a different kind of investigator, because I think that by doing these shows, that also starts the fire to get them going, and it puts some pressure on, because like I said, everybody in Mineral Wells, Texas, and some people are listening from down there, it is because of what we did, how we did it as a collective effort with everybody, and the search is going on, and people are coming forward with information that the case has changed. It went from very cold now to very, very hot, because everybody's working on it, and I think that that's what we hope to bring all the cases. Wouldn't you agree, Denny, to the shows?
I absolutely agree, and I'd like to kick this around to everybody here. You have certain shows out there, I'm talking TV at the moment, such as America's Most Wanted. I've been a fan of that show for years. Do great work, and I think the number of captures certainly bears that out. But a lot of the shows that I'm familiar with, in fact, all of the shows that I'm familiar with, be they radio, TV, or what have you, profile cases, they will do reenactments, they will encourage people to call in on a tip line to provide fresh information or fresh leads in the case of cold cases. If they have a suspect or something, if they don't, then they'll just want anyone with any information to call in, and that is great. It's a tremendous service. But I'm not familiar with any programs that out there currently that actually investigate. You know, that go beyond the profiling of the case, and that as important as that is, and with the help that that gives in generating leads and getting people to call in and getting people to talk about the case, I'm not familiar with anyone actually doing the actual inquiries, the actual investigative effort. Am I missing that, or are there other shows already out there that are doing what we are proposing to do?
If I could just jump in. I agree with you. What you've referred to is what I call BOLO stories, that they put it out there. It's a fugitive apprehension. What distinguishes those programs from this seminal investigative initiative that CrimeWire is offering is that we are going to be able to tap into the resources of skilled veteran investigators, along with skilled forensic professionals. We'll be able to call upon criminal profilers. And this is dramatically different in its approach in terms of the results that we're looking for are much different from a 911 call to a call center. And I'm not, you know, belittling or disparaging, because I, too, am a fan of America's Most Wanted. But AMW can only go so far. We're talking about looking into the evidence box and perhaps applying new technologies to old evidence that has not been looked at. We're talking about identifying persons of interest. And in cold cases, we look at relationships. Time in a cold case, whether it's an unresolved missing persons case or a cold case murder, becomes an asset to the investigator. And what we will be focusing on is identifying those relationships between people, individuals who, at the outset of an investigation before it was cold, might have been hesitant or reluctant to get involved and provide any meaningful information to investigators. With the passage of time, they may now, because of the change in relationship, be more willing to assist in resolving a case. And so, I, that's just my input. When I spoke to you guys about in getting involved, that's what really struck me was that there's nothing on the landscape that is offering the kind of unique investigative approach that CWIB brings.
Well, and it's also going to be able to go into the, you know, with Boston University. I mean, this is not a one-shop type of thing. I mean, the resources, the people that are going to be on board that have to have credits and different things to do and proceed, and then everybody's expertise in the field that they would not be able to obtain because of the costs and things. These people are going to donate their time.
True. I've been the program director of the Boston University Certificate in Professional Investigation since 2005. In addition to having a classroom platform for the past nearly 2 years, we offer our program online. And our 16-week certificate program it requires students to get involved with some extracurricular efforts. And what we try to do is get our students to work with an investigative mentor. That's typically a private investigator, somebody that I'm professionally acquainted with across the landscape. And we've had students from 37 states. And, the goal here would be it's a win-win for our students to get their hands dirty working, an old case. It's a win for families who have not been able to, get the kind of investigative attention. And, I think we're in a very unique spot here to combine, the investigative resources from professionals who I think should be in a position of giving back. I think that's what I think we will see, to go to state PI associations and let people know what we're doing. I think that there'll be an appeal, and I think people will step forward and help and work in conjunction with our students from Boston University.
And I think it's great, and we now are going to introduce our another member to the team that I'm very proud of, that he's been doing this for about 10 years. Max Cannon, we welcome you to the CrimeWire team and bureau. He is the founder of Safe City Publishing. He publishes local mugshots across the country. It's the nation's leading crime fighter publication. He features criminal crime in the news in your area, hundreds and hundreds of mugshots. He most wanted drug dealers, sex offenders, missing adults in jail. The website is safecitypublishing.com. Max Cannon, welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Why don't you explain for our listeners how you go about working with law enforcement and what you do and where your publication can be found?
Well, we started about 10 years ago with a one-page publication in Tennessee where we were featuring mainly wanted fugitives from the Middle Tennessee area that might have warrants for various and sundry offenses. And it became so popular, we expanded it. Now 10 years later, we feature a minimum of 12 to 16 pages. We're in 19 different markets. We did about 3 million copies last year, and we work with various law enforcement agencies from the federal level, FBI, CIA, DEA, ICE, down to the state level, Highway Patrol, Department of Corrections, and on down to the local level, sheriff's departments, Crime Stoppers, police departments. And we put warrants in our publications, mugshots for wanted fugitives, but we also put recently arrested, soon to be released, on parole, as well as registered sex offenders, missing children, missing adults, et cetera. And we primarily distribute through convenience stores nationwide.
Vito, why don't you talk to how important what Max is doing as far as when it comes to law enforcement, when this publication can be where people get their cars fixed, they go to the dentist and the waiting rooms, because a lot of people don't have internet.
Oh, I mean, of course. I mean, the public likes to be a private sleuth on their own. They love to be able to solve cases, all right? And having pictures out there, people take notice. When I go to my post office box in my local post office, people are standing there looking at the pictures up on the wall. You know, and I hear people talking to each other, you know, taking a good look at that. I mean, it's tremendous work that Max does, and it's invaluable across the country because people will see that subject, or even if they call in 100 different or 1,000 different leads. The police do not mind that. They will look at each one, and all you need is that one nugget of finding that one individual. But, you know, one other thing, too, Susan, I wanted to say, going back to the question as far as if there's anything out there on television or radio like what we do, no, there's not, because, you know, Tom can say it, and I can say it, we do all the same shows on a regular basis. You know, the shows out there, and they do a good job. They may send a producer to the town and a group of people to look at the case, dig up some stuff, but there's not an investigation going on. They do cases that will tear at the heartstrings of the general public, okay? Cases that will become, in effect, a high-profile case across the country. Now, my saying about that is, okay, sure, you have the high-profile cases, but anything that comes across our desk that we decide to investigate, it could be a case that nobody would want to feature on any show. But guess what, everybody? It's a high-profile case to that family that just lost their daughter, their son, their brother or their sister or whatever it may be. That's their high-profile case. So everyone is a high-profile case if you look at it that way.
That's right. Max, how does somebody, if they're just a family member, the case has gone cold and maybe they don't know if they have a reward out, are they able to contact you and say, I would like to put this publication, you know, put the reward in for my loved one?
Well, sure. Yeah, we get emails, calls all the time, people wanting to us to expose their particular case, and we're glad to do that. All they have to do is call us or email us and send us information, and we will. We have a site at www.rewardstv.com where we have over $14 million in rewards presently being offered. It's increasing by about $1 million a month, over 250 cases presently, and we feature rewards of all types, missing persons, wanted fugitives, unsolved crimes. And then we also have a rewards page in our publication that we distribute. So we get a lot of exposure for various and sundry cases. I kind of picture us as back in the old West when somebody was going around tacking up the wanted posters for Jesse James or Billy the Kid. You know, that's kind of what we're doing. You know, we're getting exposure in local communities for wanted fugitives, and doesn't cost the sheriff's department any money at all to go out. We might put out 10,000-15,000 copies of these various wanted fugitives, and so get a lot of exposure and a lot of results.
And you had said too that you found some old poster from what 1700 and said, if you offer a reward, I mean, that's what this is. This goes back to the days of the wagon train and the horses.
Well, the Denver Post said, you know, rewards are the most effective tool, especially the wanted dead or alive. Unfortunately, you know, that doesn't fit too much in today's time, the dead part of it anyway. But you get the exposure, you know, look what a reward will do. Just think about it. The reward can get a mother to turn on a son. It can get a cousin to turn on an aunt. It can get a friend to turn on a neighbor. You know, money talks. And that's what we do. We expose rewards. And it will, where people otherwise might keep it to themselves, if they can make some money out of it, you know, there's they'll turn in their best friend if necessary.
So, Tom, do you think that, I mean, what we're hoping to do, too, is in this partnership with Max Cannon with the rewards is to also feature and say, because people think there are no rewards, and you don't hear that a lot. So to be able to say, here, go to our partner over here and go to the resource page and look, we have the rewards up here. I mean, I think that also gives people incentive, good times or bad times, to like Max said, to turn. You've got that case out, Max, in the two girls in Oklahoma, Skyla
and Taylor, yeah.
Nobody...
Well, 2008. You know, there were two young girls, 11 years old, in a small Oklahoma rural community, murdered on a rural roadside, each shot five or six times, two different weapons. $160,000 reward was put up. You would certainly think it turned some heads in that community, which it hasn't so far, but in my opinion, it's probably some strangers that were coming through there and committed that horrific crime. But at least it's opened a lot of people's eyes, you know, 160,000
but they don't know about that.
In a small community.
They don't know about that. So, Tom, how important is that when we do these shows, too, to say, like in this case, people forget about it after the news doesn't cover it or after it's not on some of the network shows, that for us to say there's a $160,000 reward here, folks, let's solve this thing. These are two innocent children. How important is that going to be to what we're going to be doing?
Susan, it's another arrow in the quiver, and it's an integral part of the investigative process. Earlier I mentioned that we look for changes in relationships, and just as Max has articulated, money will motivate somebody to turn on another individual. And I agree that this is something that needs to be, you know, in terms of a multifaceted approach, the reward money needs to be mentioned at every juncture of the investigation.
Because, Susan, Vito, as you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, Susan, what else that we bring to the table, our group, our new thing that we're doing here. I was just thinking as everybody was talking, me and Denny were just at a Las Vegas show. And through the producer of the show, who we both know, we were introduced to a lady in the show who lost her son about 5-6 years ago under mysterious circumstances. Now, this woman would never even think about going to TV or anybody else to obtain any help. She just sits back and lets whatever happened with the police department continue, which is fine. But because she became comfortable with us through the producer, we were exchanging cards today. She's going to email Denny all the information. We're going to look at it and see if we could feature it. See, that's what we bring to the table, because the vast majority of the people out there would not try to go to a television or a radio show. They wouldn't even know how to start. They'd be embarrassed or whatever it may be. We change that whole thing. Just when people think they know all the answers, we change the questions, okay? So we know what we're doing here and doing this. We're offering something totally new. And that lady today, Denny, that we met with, showed us that we're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. And incredibly, Vito, before we left today, our producer friend was telling one of the ladies who worked in this particular venue that we were going to be looking at Cindy's case. And the lady, you know, she explained a little bit about what we do. And the lady shook my hand and she says, my God, she said, what great news. She said, after you're done with her friend's case, she says, I've got another one to send you. She said, that's absolutely incredible. So, I mean, it's funny, not funny, ha-ha, but when you're out there, the numbers of people that are in the situation, it's compared to the total population of the United States, it's a small percentage, but there's a lot of people out there in these very bad situations that have no idea what to do or how to do it.
Not only that, Denny, what you're saying, Tom brought it up at the beginning of the show here, with the budget restraints, okay? I'm an ex-cop. I worked a long time as a cop. I worked in the detective bureau. But it's not the same way nowadays. The states are all going bankrupt. So we could sit here and yell and scream about why is there a stockpile of 50 cases in this one small police department or whatever it may be. But that's another reason why it's important for us, right there, because the states are broke. And they're laying off cops 30 or 40 at a time. They're cutting down the hours for the detective bureau. Okay, so what we bring to the table another avenue for these people.
Maybe we should go into the crime of the budgets across the country of government and then see how much is wasted there. I'm not trying to start a firestorm either, but I just think that, you know, it's ridiculous when we sit down and analyze budgets. There could be more money allocated towards the solving of these crimes, Tom, I think, and there's not.
Well, again, you look at the amount of money that's allocated for recruit training. There are not a lot of new recruits hitting the street. Specialized training, particularly in the investigative area, it's negligible. There's nothing there. They don't have the resources. In fact, more Americans, with respect to such crimes as identity theft, are turning to the private sector. And I can see that down the line that more people will be turning to the private sector and particularly CWIB for assistance.
Max Cannon, thank you so much. Your site is www.safecitypublishing.com. And for those listening, too, when we announce the new show on Saturday mornings through Safe City Publishing, which will just be, it'll be rewards TV, basically, crime TV. And it'll be an hour every Saturday that will be also, you know, the arm of a big part of what CrimeWire does. So, Max, you and I are looking forward to that, aren't we?
Yes, for sure. Our Crime Pays, our new Crime Pays radio show should get a lot of exposure. You know, it will contribute. You know, we already have a great deal of print media coverage, so this will just be another avenue for us.
Thank you so much, sir. Next,
welcome,
we have Gene Cervantes on with us.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just came on.
Okay. Gene?
Hello? Yeah, hi.
Gene?
I just came on.
I know that. How are you?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. okay.
We're just trying to do a smoother transition than what you didn't give us. That's okay.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. go ahead.
Denny?
Gene, I was wondering now, for anybody who isn't, Gene's been on the show several times, the CrimeWire show, but for anybody who's not familiar with Gene, he's with the organization Citizens Against Homicide. And Gene, would you give us your impression, as if you want, as a spokesperson for CAH, of what you think about our new direction here?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. It's a tremendous, tremendous opportunity for an added resource. Because as you know, Denny, you and I have talked, and what has happened in the past is that profile cases. We, meaning Citizens Against Homicide, will profile a case on a on our newsletter and gives national distribution, and that's the extent of the work that CAH does and gives attention to the case. We do continue to make phone calls after that on behalf of the families, but then when we partnershiped up with CrimeWire, we had the Blog Talk radio show, so that was added publicity. But again, where do we go from there? And I was constantly being asked by the families of homicide victims, well, what's next? And, you know, it was a dilemma that I was in, you know, when I tried to explain to them, well, nothing, you know, is basically the bottom line. And now with CrimeWire Investigative Bureau, I mean, it's fantastic. It's just a super opportunity to take it one step further and take it to that next level.
Vito?
Hello? Is that
I'm just
listening to Gene, and you know what's so amazing is that, you know, Gene's organization, we all come at things a different way, okay? We're going to be coming at, I mean, we have our CrimeWire show where we highlight cases. We try to stir the pot with that a little bit. We have our new show now, you know, the CrimeWire Investigative Bureau, where we're actually going to do investigations and try to help people at least look into the cases. And Gene does his thing, just like Max Cannon does his thing, okay? And it's so amazing that we're all part of this puzzle. And if you try to solve a puzzle and you leave a couple pieces out, it ain't gonna work. Okay,
But people don't realize too that us all coming together. This is things that we've been doing behind the scenes anyway after the shows, as much as we can. We just can't get to everybody that, you know, comes to us. And you know, and also, Tom, how important is it for people to be patient with us? Not patient for, you know, a year or two, but patient with the process of how we're going forward with this.
Yeah, I mean, one person on our blog said Gene is the first person in this field to believe me about my brother and got me in contact with everyone. And those are the type of things you see. They got in contact with Gene, who spread it out to us and this and that and the whole bit, and that's how it's supposed to work here. No one should just sit back and say, oh, I want to solve this case. I want to get all the glory. We got to all work in it together. It don't matter who solves the case.
Susan, if I could just comment on your question. The people that become involved as consumers of our criminal justice system really don't have a playbook or a manuscript that guides them through the process. And that's what CWIB will be able to do, to talk about the ongoing process, how slow it is, and explain to them and be there for them to provide not only investigative support but crisis intervention to help them go through this process and help them understand the limitations and the difficulties of working, again, with the fiscal constraints that are out there. And again, I would hope that it's an education process that all of us will continue to learn about, as well as educating the customers, the people that become, unfortunately, consumers of our criminal justice system, particularly the law enforcement function.
Dan?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things we have on the bottom of our various announcements and so forth is together we can make a difference. And I think just tonight here with Max Cannon and Gene Cervantes and so forth, instead of us independently working only alone trying to do our whatever we can to advance these cases and hopefully work toward resolution, by now forming the relationships we formed, you can call them partnerships or relationships, and I think pooling our resources, combining our resources, if you will, is a great step. And I'm very excited about it. And it not only is Crime Wire or Citizens Against Homicide or Rewards TV, it is the public joining with us to get involved. And it's not only, as you know, Susan, from the Oklahoma situation with the medical examiner, I'm going to call it a scandal, with the medical examiner situation there. It can even be something working toward getting legislation if needed.
Which is happening right now. The Shonda Turner reform bill has just passed the House. Donna Turner and Jay Mendros, the lawyer, I mean, they have, I think, three more stops to make before it passes all three, and then it becomes reality when the governor signs it into law. All of that has been a work in progress and a teamwork by all of us.
Yes.
And we also have what no one has in the country, Denny, is the EAA, the Evidentiary Abuse Affidavit, something else that Crime Wire, because we see all these cases after the fact.
Hey, you know, let me comment on that, if you would. The Evidentiary Abuse Affidavit, okay, I received an email a couple of weeks ago from a lady who had been attacked by her significant other. And she survived the attack, but it was the assailant's, the boyfriend's intention to kill her. And she commented that, in addition to the fear of dying, it went through her mind, you know, I'm just going to disappear. My body's going to end up somewhere in the woods, decomposed. It'll never be found. And my family, my children, the police, nobody's going to have a clue what happened to me. This guy is going to get away with murdering me. Fortunately for her, he didn't. She survived. But the evidentiary abuse affidavit is designed, I think, for people in her situation, people who are in such relationships with their intimate partners, domestic violence, that their lives are actually in danger.
But I think it goes before that. I think it's also before people say, because the people, both men and women, because we see men also disappear, men also vanish. You know, we've had a couple of cases. Michael Tapley, no one has found him yet, and the person he was married to should be a suspect. She's not. We've had Michael Hubrick, his brother Matthew, who was the Fox News producer. Again, you've got Janice Smolenski. It's when you're breaking up, or you before you announce you're going to do that, you've got to put this in place, because if something happens, we all think, Denny and Tom and Vito that and Gene, that nobody's going to have, you know, they're not going to hurt us, they're not going to take it to that level, but we're seeing it otherwise, aren't we, now, because in the aftermath of these cold cases. Right?
Exactly. Absolutely, and this type of proactive initiative, actually working co-actively with law enforcement, putting law enforcement and civil attorneys on notice that there's this volcanic interpersonal conflict that is about to erupt. Will it deter? We would hope that might happen, that this might deter any kind of future interpersonal conflict and violence resulting in homicide. But if it doesn't occur, well, then it's there. It's on the record.
But it's also resource dollars for these big cases that we're seeing, Sean Paniers, Peterson, Josh Powell. They're spending all of these money, these municipalities and these states, to investigate, when if people had done this prior to even announcing, we would be able to, I think, have more resources for these other cold cases that, you know, families are waiting for justice.
Well, Susan, let me say this. As we all know, you know, 90-something percent of the police officers out there do a tremendous job. The difference,
yes,
I have seen, though, from my generation of being a cop to the newer generation, not everybody, but some of the younger officers are very willing and quick to end an investigation. In my day, we would not be allowed to do that. Our lieutenant would say, no, go back and look. Go interview those 12 people again. Go do this, go do that. See, a lot of times nowadays, it's like, well, we put it on hold, we ended it, come back to us if you have any new information, we'll look into it. We've heard, you know, we've heard all this over our year with Crime Wire. Sometimes I think some of the new centurions out there, the new cops, are quick to end a case. I don't know if Tom would agree with me. I don't know what it is about it, but sometimes.
Let me
jump
in there.
They're tremendous officers across the country.
Let me jump in there. Vito, you are absolutely correct. Back when you and I were cops, and I am, you know, thinking of my experience, back in 78 when I was appointed a police officer after my lengthy two-week police academy, we were obviously, and you can remember this, those 12 people that you would go and interview, you weren't paid overtime back then. You went and did that because the culture demanded that you go out there and try to resolve that. Unfortunately, today the work ethic is dramatically different. They very rarely will do anything on their own. Would you agree with me?
Oh, definitely, Tom. And not only that, you were a police chief. You were a boss there. I'm sure you wouldn't allow some of these final reports with every other word misspelled and jangled sentences and everything else to come across your desk and you to sign it. It would be sent right back to those officers, correct?
Absolutely. And as a sergeant, working the street and as a detective supervisor, the same thing, making sure that the content, the grammar, that when an officer was going to stand in front of the court, that report would reflect the professionalism and experience and the values of the agency. There's a dramatic difference today. I fully agree with you on that, Vito.
Could I just bring Gene in for a minute? Gene, now you deal as part of the service that the Citizens Against Homicide provides. You have to contact these law enforcement agencies that are handling these various cases that are referred to you. You've listened to what DeVito and Tom have had to say about possibly the work ethic today in the police isn't what it once was. What's your feeling on that based on your dealings with different agencies? Gene?
Is Gene still with us? Maybe we lost him.
I don't hear him.
I don't either.
Lost him. It was. I'd be curious about that. I know Gene has told me in some conversations we've had that I think it reflects.
He's back.
I'm
Gene,
sorry.
Are you there?
Yeah, shut up, Aaron. I was listening to everything. I forgot to press one.
Okay.
Anyway, no, okay. I agree 100% with everything that's being said. And one of the problems that I see, or I should say, however, one of the problems that I see is the medical examiner will determine cause of death to be X, Y, or Z, and as a result, the investigators drop the case. They say, well, he said accident. Well, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that would support foul play, they still say, oh, we can't examine the, I mean, further investigate the case because the ME determined it to be an accident or suicide when everybody knows it wasn't.
But doesn't it go towards being a seasoned veteran, all of you? I mean, doesn't it go towards, you know, I have nothing against officers at all. And I'm just trying to say that it just seems like pilots not flying their plane with cases. Is it because they don't get enough cleat hours when they're trained? Yes.
Yeah, Susan, let me say this and then turn it over to Tom because he's worked as a major boss in police departments. What goes on now, back in the days that I was a cop and Tom was a cop, we didn't make any money, okay? What I mean by that was very low-paying jobs. We were cops because we loved being a cop. We loved doing our work. We wanted to jump into the cases. We wanted to help the general public. Police departments now, by and large, many, many of them, especially in the Northeast, everyone's making six figures, $100,000, $200,000, okay? So there's a money thing there. People work a lot of what they call side jobs, ditch jobs, where they stand by the holes in the road for construction. There's a lot of money to be made, okay? We did it because we really loved the job. Now, and again, many cops nowadays still do it and are tremendous investigators trained in forensics and CSI and everything like that. But that's a big thing that I have seen. We were cops because we loved it and we made hardly any money.
Vito, if I could amplify that, I agree. My observation, you know, going back when I was a lieutenant in a department next to Boston, the focus did change to precisely what you have hit on, the side jobs. They were more concerned about standing and working a detail as opposed to acquainting themselves with updates and changes in domestic law. And that was the easy way out. And suddenly, law enforcement, the actual pursuit of justice, takes a back seat to the financial concerns. And, you know, you're absolutely correct that is a contemporary problem that confronts American law enforcement. It goes right back to what I said earlier about the solvability of murders in this country. It's at a staggering 62%. Compared to 30 years ago, when you and I were both in the field as investigators, that it was 92%. Part of it is the lack of training, the lack of experience, and the apathy. Vito?
So, can't we then come up? I think our next move is a Crime Wire boot camp, for God's sakes, because here, you know, like I have learned more in these last probably 2 years, 24/7, and I jump up and down in speaking with investigators, and I try to be very polite and very nice, but it's when I, you know, I am assuming that they have more training and more knowledge, and I think that we all see this. Tom, with you, with what you're doing now in PI, and Vito, and Denny, and even Gene, we are educating them because this is all we're doing. There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, you know, can I jump in, Susan?
Yes.
Okay. You know, the pool, the labor pool for, I believe Tom had mentioned it, but the labor pool for these forensic specialists and is diminishing. Because of the budget crisis throughout the United States at all law enforcement agencies, and those that can afford them can't afford to retain them. They can afford
I don't understand, all of you. Why is it every single officer, every single professional in forensics, they all have to have continuing hour education? What are they doing with it? Are they? I don't understand if you have a certain amount of hours that you have to go.
They're going to the private sector.
But while they're employed and they're still on the job, they're mandated to take these extra hours every year to keep their commissions up and things. Who's teaching them what, where, when, how? Because I'm not seeing the results of this anywhere.
Susan, it's not just their continuing education, the training area. When an investigation is on the table, a boss will look at it and ask, what are the solvability factors? And then before they're going to allocate a budget on an overtime basis, they have to see demonstrative solvability factors. And in many cases, it's just not there. And so, again, because of the shrinking fiscal budget, they have to make a decision. And, of course, people get shortchanged because they just don't have the wherewithal to spend a lot of money on these resources.
Okay, this is where I get frustrated, though. If I can look at something or we can look at something and know right away and be 99.9% correct, how is that then? If it takes less lip service just looking at it and figuring it out in some ways, it's not that much. It's not check the box for justice here. And all I'm trying to point out is that it seems to be kind of back-ass to me. Yes.
Let me just say that I understand where you're coming from. What you're seeing, but you're not really defining it right now, is that there's an ongoing change in the investigative dynamic in this country.
Yes. That's right.
That's what's occurring here. And you know, you're on the cutting edge of what's occurring in this country. It'll be the private sector. What's more American than the private sector stepping forward and solving public problems?
And Susan.
Tom,
go ahead.
No. That was my, that was my comment. That I think that what Susan is seeing, or in what we all are seeing, is that there's a change in the delivery of law enforcement services.
But is it also too because there's no media anymore? Meaning you don't have the beat street reporter following these crimes and putting some heat on them.
Now, the beat report has been changed. The beat report is now Susan Milano Murphy.
You got my name wrong there, but that's okay. I'll give you that.
Susan?
Yeah.
Susan?
Yes, sir.
Just to kind of make a comment, a couple of our bloggers, they made a good point, and I want to explain something to them. They said that, the police do not make enough money for what they do. Other people agreed. Of course. That is a good point, okay? I know that. I was in a shootout. I stood alive and the bad guy lay dead. I know what these cops go through, okay? I can speak with credibility, it's called, okay? I shot my gun. The bad guy shot back. I went home, okay? What I'm talking about is the mindset the bloggers need to understand, because I've been there and Tom's been there. The mindset of the cops who nowadays in the locker rooms are only talking about what ditch job, what side job they're going to after their 8 hours are gone. And that's a fact. We've been there. We know that. And as far as the six-figure thing, many, many municipalities across the country, many of the bigger cities, many of them all make over $100,000. All you got to do is Google and get the – now, I'm not talking about a small town that somebody's making $30,000 or $40,000, but we know what police officers make nowadays, and they do deserve it. They do deserve
it. Do.
Just do their job. That's the whole key. Okay? Yeah. That's the handful. That's the 5 or 7% that don't do it. Do your job.
Yeah, they need to step up.
Go ahead,
jump in here for a minute.
Yes, sir.
Our time is flying by, and we got four or five things we really need to mention. I'd like to say that one of the other things we're doing in our focus here is we're making our CrimeWire site more victim-friendly. And I'd like to encourage people to go to the site, browse around. You'll see we've added a resources page. And that's going to be links to various groups or organizations or individuals who might be able to be used as a resource. Now, we're putting the links up, and please remember it is still the responsibility of the consumer to research and investigate before they get involved with anybody. What we're doing is providing links to these various websites that you can go to, take a look, see if they offer something, that a service that you might be interested in. And there are support groups, for example. I mean, these aren't pay things. These are and areas where you can go and get information. And that's going to be a work in progress. It's always going to be being updated and adding new things and so forth. But please visit that. And if you've got a website or an organization or group that you've had success that you recommend, let us know about it, and we'll check them out, and we can add them to our resources page. We've also added on our other pages various things, forums, for example. We've added where you can go on there now. We want to hear victims' families' stories. Okay, please go on there and put your post about your experience dealing with the system. What went right? What went wrong? Maybe you've got some advice from your experience that can be used by someone else in the same situation. So please go check these things out and check out the website. It's a work in progress. We're going to be continuing to make updates and so on. But I encourage you to take a look at it. And I think what we've got to do, since the main focus tonight was to announce the creation of the CrimeWire Investigative Bureau, is there are three things we're going to be looking at, several things. One is what we were calling the solvability factor. Tom got into that a little bit earlier. Tom, would you want to expand on that and let people know when they contact CrimeWire through the website under the contact page or at phone number 312-675-2254, that's 312-675-2254, that's one of the things, one of the criteria about accepting the case in the Bureau, the solvability factor. Exactly what does that mean?
Certainly, Denny. When we refer to solvability factors, what we want to be able to pursue to apply investigative resources toward are persons of interest, people who were identified, people who were associated as persons of interest. We need to have people to look at. We need to have some documentary evidence that can link us to people. If there was some physical evidence, then perhaps, you know, again, new technologies can be applied to old cases going back 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years ago. We're also looking for, again, testimonial evidence. Are there people that you can refer us to that have information that have been hesitant or reluctant to come forward? So, again, what we're going to do is evaluate the totality of evidence associated with each particular case and make an informed decision. And perhaps we may have to say to people that the case is not ripe at this particular point in time to have CWIB apply its resources. We'll come back and revisit it in the future, but again, what we want to do is to be able to have some tangible documentary, testimonial, or physical evidence that we can pursue. Denny?
Hey, thank you very much, Tom. You know, we obviously could have gone longer here. Before we lose the audience, I just want to go out a little bit out of sequence here and mention, while people are still able to listen, that on Tuesday, March 1st, we're going to devote the entire hour to the unsolved murder of Eric Cross, 16-year-old who was murdered in Vicksburg, Michigan on June 26, 1983. Although witnesses named Eric's killer, no arrests have been made in the nearly 28-year-old case. Eric's sister, Jackie Cross Mitchell, will join us to the status of the investigation and her efforts to get justice for her brother. please make sure to join us. We're going to be taking a lot of phone calls, and who knows, maybe we'll someone will call in with some hot information that will actually break this case open.
Thank you to our crime wire. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Denny, and I'm trying to get the lead detective to participate also. He still has to get permission from his chief.
Okay, thanks, Gene.
You bet.
Thank you to the CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, the public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be Tuesday, March 1st.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you would like your case to be featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Or to hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play.
Remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard. When there is nowhere else to turn, visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Hey, Susan.